For coming. I am going to walk through an overview of the budget. It is 550 pages, so I won't go into a lot of detail. You have plenty of that available. I understand we have the material on the website now, so I know in the handouts there was a chart that doesn't show up very well. You can get that electronically off the website. I think it is probably the most important, of course, slide of the presentation. It tracks our efforts to balance the budget over the last 3 years. So I'm going to go through a bit of a presentation, talk about this budget in specific, and then I'm going to focus a bit on crime at the end, our most important topic. So with that, you know, as we make a budget, it really is our moral choices about what we care about, right? We put money onto those projects, those services that we think are more important than others. So while we do that and we go through the process to create a budget, we have this whirlwind of competing demands. And some of those are here. We want to balance the budget. That's the number three priority for our residents who took the survey. And it is one of the top priorities we have. Funding the pension solutions pulling at us, competing for talent with other employers. We are in the middle of a class and comp study that's just getting finished, and there are some interesting results from that I'll share. But that's another demand on our attention as we build the budget. Of course, assuring a safe transition of 911 is a top priority as well. And I can tell you we will be adding police officers in this budget. Two officers and one sergeant for a total of three. We're going to have those officers focus on neighborhood policing. A lot of people call it community policing. But it's that type of policing that engenders relationships with the community. And that is what we need right now. So the big picture for 2014, we recommend a total estimated spending of $414 million and change. And revenues come in at $386 million. Now, that doesn't look balanced, does it? What we have is really a bifurcated approach here. The general fund is the most important fund because we can fund anything with it, any general operation. That needs to balance, and that's what we've achieved this year. We'll get into that detail. The rest of the funds that we operate, the other 52 budgets, really don't have to balance. They're intended to be project-type work, right? So it's the electric utility, where we might save up a balance and then do a big project and spend it all down. So we spend more than we take in that year, but we've built up a cash balance. So it's planned, and it is intended to achieve a project. So, for example, the South Transmission Line project will be funded in that way, in part. So that's the total numbers of the budget. We do have planned uses of fund balance, and the general fund is balanced, except for that pension item I mentioned earlier that's taking our attention. We do have an increase in pension costs of $1 million, and last year, a solution I'm very proud of, in cooperation with employee groups, labor groups, the council, and the task force, we came up with a solution to turn the corner on our problem. We have begun that process. So this number would be larger if not for those changes last year. And what we're going to begin to see is a curve. So the growth rate will stop, and then it will shrink over time over the 20 years of this solution. And we will begin to actually have a reduced payment into the pension system over time. We have not gotten there yet, but we have started the process. So what that means is in the general fund, there is an additional $1 million to fund that pension solution. I'm also proposing a net increase of staff of almost 21 positions. All but three of those have a funding source dedicated for their use. So one example is a building inspector where 75% of that cost comes back from building permit fees. So only three of those, and that are the police officers, do not have dedicated funding, meaning that's a net increase to our revenue expenditure equation. So with that, here's my favorite chart. In 2011, we laid out a three-year plan. I should say in 2012, we laid out a three-year plan to balance the budget. This is a picture of the general fund, and the green line is the revenue, the blue line is our expenditures. You really don't want to be in a position where the blue line is higher than the green line. And so we set a path to make those two lines meet. I'm extremely proud to say today that with this budget, we have closed the gap between revenue and expenditures. So you can see in 11, we had a $2.9 million gap. We closed $600,000 of that gap in 12. In 13, we closed another million, and we finish it in 14. And I'm also cautiously optimistic that in future years, as you see here, we may see a surplus where we can then begin to decide which of the community priorities that surplus should be dedicated to. That's a future conversation. This budget year, the story really is the fact that we've achieved balance. And we've achieved balance through three major cuts. So the 911 emergency services is a big story, obviously. That will transfer to the county. That's $1.8 million of general fund expenditure that will go down. Now, we are carrying that service for the initial period. So while the county's revenue begins to come in, but it's not there yet, we'll be providing the service as we always have. In a budget terms, that means we'll be paying for 911 in the interim. Now, I've made a commitment not to drop the baton and the handoff. I'll use that metaphor. And so we will carry them longer than it takes for the revenue to start to come in for the county. However, we are working very closely with the county. They have been doing great work in setting up their systems to have this service, and I believe there will not be any errors or mistakes in that handoff. But it does mean we don't actually see any financial benefit. The net this year will be zero from that transfer because we're carrying it for the beginning. So all of the reduced expenditure goes toward balancing the budget. The benefit of this will show up in 15. The second one is really the health care premium subsidies for retired city employees. You may remember last year we made a decision to cut that benefit where we subsidize retirees' health care. And the council chose to spread that over 2 years to sort of soften the impact. And I know our retirees appreciated that choice by council. It did extend the deficit 1 year, but this is the second year of that decision, so it does not include funding for subsidies for health care premiums for retirees. It also does not contain funding for CAT TV. The contract with CAT TV has expired, and there is no money to fund it in this budget. If we change our mind, the council, of course, will receive this, has received this proposed budget. It is their job now to decide about those moral choices, whether they agree or disagree in the budget, and do they want to make any changes. They may decide to make changes, which is their purview. We'll shift gears a little bit and focus on the impact on customers. You do have a budget in brief document, which follows the budget message. So when you see the 550 pages, quite honestly, you can get most of what there is to know out of the first 20. And that's a combo of between the budget message and the budget in brief. So I recommend those to you. The big story here, no sales tax or property tax increases. We're holding the line on our spending. In fact, we're cutting it. Utility rate increases, we are not recommending any other than in the water department, which has already been approved by voters. So that 5% increase was planned and approved by voters previous. That's about $1.77 average monthly impact. I am recommending an increase in our parking rates. I'm very excited about this concept. This idea is to create a park and ride out of our entire system. So if you are parking in our parking garage, the rates are going to go up $10 a month, but you're going to receive a bus pass. So you'll be able to get on anywhere in the city, get off anywhere in their city. You'll be able to have park your car when you want to, and you can take the bus when you want to. This is an incredible initiative. It's very innovative, and I am very proud of the transit staff for coming up with this. The other thing that this is a corollary to, that funding will then be leveraged with our federal sources. So every dollar we raise through this source will be matched by a federal dollar. So we expect about $300,000 in revenue from that. That will be matched by the feds for a total of $600,000 increase to the transit budget. That allows us to balance that budget. As you know, that's been in crisis for a number of years. And at the same time, we're overhauling our service line. So we will be spreading the bus service to all corners of the city. I'll give you a personal story. Right now, it would take me an hour to walk to the nearest bus stop. And I live inside the city limits. It would take me an hour to walk to the nearest bus stop. With the changes we're proposing in transit, I can get to the nearest bus stop in 5 minutes. Now, for the first time, that becomes a viable choice for me. Couple that with we will run the buses till 8 p.m. every day of the week, Monday through Friday. So every workday. So for the first time, the transit system is a viable commute option. And this increase makes that possible. So I'm very proud of that. I'm excited about that service improvement, and I believe it's something the community has been starving for many years. There are some minor business license fee changes and park and rec fee changes. These really just keep up with the cost of living type increases across our service lines. So new initiatives. I sort of talked about transit. We're calling it the Como Connect project. It is a major reinvention of our transit service. We will serve more people through more of the city, more of the day. I couldn't be more excited. We are going to also be rolling out technology, right? So there's going to be an app for every route, not just FastCat, but every route. You're going to see when the bus is coming. It's a very sophisticated algorithm. It is on the buses right now. The software is learning of the system so it can calculate the time you'll wait. So if you pull up the app, you'll see your bus stop, and it will tell you fairly accurately, and a lot more accurately than our current app does, how much time you're going to be waiting or when that bus will get to the stop you want. So this is a tremendous service, and I look forward to it. We are also going to overhaul our rate structure so that there will be, for the first time, a daily pass and an annual pass. We've not had that before. So massive improvement in the service level from transit. We will also begin operating the contact center. This is going to be a dramatic increase in our service level for every resident who has a question about Public Works. Now, we're starting with Public Works because they already take the most calls. And we're going to add service line one at a time as we get our feet wet and get good at answering those questions. So one of the major things we learned from the survey is that people have a hard time reaching the right person who knows the answer to their question or can help them in the city. We are going to fix that with this contact center. So you'll have one number to call. Once it's fully operational, it doesn't matter what your question is or what you need. You call that number, they will be able to help you. And they will take ownership of your issue and get back to you. This is what we all want, right? When we call someone, we want a person to answer, not a machine. And want them to get what we're talking about, and we want them to help us. Don't make me talk to five other people. So I'm excited about that service level increase as well. Coffers Project is probably the project that will take the most effort of anything we're doing and may never be seen by the public. It is the software that will run the city government. We have a software package now. It's 20 years old. When I've said in the past, we Columbians get every penny out of a dollar we spend. I'm not kidding. We have 20-year-old software running the city. And it takes, you know, a massive amount of work. We have workarounds. We have other software we use so that we can actually feed into the system we have. We're updating that with modern tech, and so we can get rid of the shadow systems and just use one. It will also make us more efficient. We'll be able to do things the community has wanted that we haven't been able to do before. And this involves everything we do. If you think about any organization, you're doing two fundamental things. You're paying people and you're buying stuff. Maybe you're selling stuff. We do that too. So we have to have software that can handle all that, from a park pass to the utility bill to making the payroll. So it's a big project. It's going to take 2 years. It has 32 modules that we'll be implementing. We're going to take the time to get it right on all these things. We are going to complete the comprehensive plan. We're weeks away from that, and then we will move into implementation phase. This will really drive one of the areas of dissatisfaction in the survey was how well the city plans for growth. Well, we're going to have a comprehensive plan that really guides how we grow into the future. So that was a massive public undertaking. It was a 3-year process gathering public input. We think we know what the community wants as we move forward, and it is reflected in this plan. So I'm very proud of that as well. You're going to sense a theme here. We are responding to what we learned from the community about what it wants from a scientifically based survey, right? It's not just an interest group demanding something. It is the whole community telling us what they want. We are being as responsive as we can be within the means that we have. We have a human rights focus as well. So when I say we're funding things, that can be boring. We are doing the right things as well. So we're moving our human rights focus from the health department to the law department. We're combining that with some ADA work. So we'll have centralized an expert in ADA and human rights, housing rights, for example, issues. So we're going to centralize that and I think provide a better product. Not that the product was bad, it was good, but provide a better product because we're adding all these things together. And no discussion of the budget would be complete without mentioning we are going to have a ballot initiative for stormwater. We've been talking about stormwater for many years. And every time it rains, you don't have to go far in the first ward to find exactly what we're talking about. Basements flood, sewage backs up into basements. And this is sprinkled throughout the community, but definitely concentrated in the older part of the community, the part that was built first. Those pipes are wearing out. So we have a two-pronged initiative. One is to fix the sewers. The other is to fix the stormwater, which is where the rain goes. So we will have a ballot initiative of some kind prepared for the next fiscal year. Other investments I'll go through quickly. One of the things I'm very proud of is our work on resurfacing roads. You have seen these as you've driven around the city. It is the number one goal for our community in the survey that they want us to do with new money. Roads and police public safety. So we have 21 street resurfacing projects this year. The list is in the budget message. We try to put that work where people use it the most, and we have seen a great impact in the survey. We had 10% increase in satisfaction in one cycle of the survey. That's unheard of. That's phenomenal. And I think it is due entirely to the fact that we have paved more streets, and we've paved the streets that more people use. So I do propose increasing that budget by another $300,000. You might think, well, if you've had that increase, why increase the budget? It's because it still would take us 48 years to get every street resurfaced. Well, they don't last 48 years, so we haven't hit the mark yet, and we know the community wants more as well. So we have to continue to up our game in that regard. Class comp and benefits study. We've just gotten pretty well finished on a comprehensive review of what it means to work for the city government and how competitive we are with our market, our competition. We found a couple things. We found that on 285 instances for employees, we are paying below the market minimum. So we're the lowest paying job in a handful of job descriptions that impact 285 people. So this budget proposes raising their salaries to the minimum of the market. So we don't want to be the lowest paid police officer or firefighter or bus driver or solid waste driver. But we don't want to be the highest either. So this budget gets those folks to minimum. And then we have an employee pay plan. That's an alliteration, isn't it? Propose adding one floating holiday, and that is because by pulling those folks to minimum, we're out of money. And if we spend any more, we wouldn't balance. So what I'm proposing is no across-the-board raises, but we are going to give raises to about 20% of the employees. And because we can't give an across-the-board raise, I need to do something to recognize the great work that almost every city employee brings every day. And so I'm going to do that with an additional floating holiday. Interestingly enough, our comp class study shows we have fewer days off than our market, than our competition. We certainly have fewer days off than the county, for example. So that's something we can do to begin to fix our system as well. We are going to increase our contributions to the health savings account, which I believe then makes it a very compelling offering to our employees. It also costs the city less, so it's a win-win deal for all of us. And of course, we're going to end the retirement health care subsidy. So where to find the budget? It's on the web. You can grab it. You might have it already. There are hard copies at the city clerk's office and in the finance department. One of the budget cuts a few years ago was we stopped printing, 550 pages a piece. It takes a lot of ink to do that. So public budget sessions, and this is probably most important. We're going to have four meetings where the public can come discuss this budget, this list of our morals, right? And three of those are council meetings, so the August 19th, September 3rd, September 16th, and then probably most importantly, there's an all-day Saturday session, August 24th, just what you want to do on a Saturday, right? Talk about the budget. Well, that's an overview of the budget. I'd like to focus a bit more now on crime. It is our number one mission. It is the first thing we care about as a city government. It's why we spend so much of our general fund on police and fire. If you put those two together, nothing else comes close. So it's very troubling when we have a spring and a summer like we've had, where we've had a lot of shots fired incidents. We've had four murders this year. And it gets our attention. And I will tell you, there were shots fired incidents, murders last year that got our attention. And what did we do about it? Well, I'm going to tell you. We created last year a ceasefire initiative where we invited the ATF to come to town and help us. We invited the FBI to come to town and help us with this problem. Our police department has done a phenomenal job doing the work of the police department. This is right out of TV, right? They follow the evidence. They gather the evidence. You've seen this scene in CSI a million times, right? Follow the evidence. That's what they do, and we catch the bad guys. And I'm proud to say to you now, we do not have any unresolved shootings. That is what makes me proud of the police department. They are doing great work. The sheriff has criticized the police department, and I'm here today to tell you the sheriff is wrong. He is not using facts to back up his assertions. And I don't know why, but I have brought the facts today, and you can have them as you leave. The crime rate, and I know it's going to surprise some folks because of the frequency with which the shootings have happened and the murders, the crime rate is down this year. It's down over the last 20 years that we've had a trend line down. This community, believe it or not, is safer than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Interestingly enough, and we learned through the survey, the community doesn't feel safer. They say only 61% of them say they feel safe, are very satisfied with the feeling of safety. So there's a disconnect there. It's an interesting question. We know factually, truthfully, there is less crime, less violent crime in this town than there was when it was a lot smaller 20 years ago. But we're more afraid of it. And we need to take that seriously, and we need to deal with it. And we are taking it seriously. I'm going to tell you two things we're doing to address the crime that are new. Again, very proud of the police department. This came from them. Much like the transit solution came from the transit folks, we have, I think, a phenomenal idea coming from the police department. In my mind, I call this an all-hands-on-deck approach, and that's what it is. You may know that the police department has 160-some-odd sworn officers. Many of those folks have to work at a desk, right? There's a lot of support work that has to go on to have a patrol service functioning. And we have a lot of folks who are fully empowered police officers who really don't get in the field very often. So this project's called Mission One. This is the name the police officers give it. Mission One, I think that speaks highly. Captain Richenberger proposed this to the chief, who came to tell me about it. I said, I love it. Implement it. He said, we did it a week ago. And that's the kind of leadership I love. It's good. It's right. You don't have to wait for me to say yes. Do it. And they've done it. And what that means is if you have a badge, you're doing some patrol work. So we have folks on Thursday, Friday, Saturday who are going to be out downtown and in trouble spots around the city. So we will have more presence, more feet on the street, as the CPOA director likes to say. That's precisely what we've done and what we have been doing. Mission One is the name of that. The other thing, of course, is we're going to hire three more officers, and I am requiring that they be neighborhood-based police officers, so community-focused. You'll remember last year we did this in Douglas Park area. James and Jamie, two great officers who have earned nicknames from the neighborhood. They call them Starsky and Hutch. And they've been phenomenal ambassadors for the police department. And that neighborhood feels a lot safer than it did before, and it has resulted in a dramatic increase in that feeling of safety. We're going to put these folks, just like Starsky and Hutch, James and Jamie, into neighborhoods where they will get to know people that live there. They're not there to arrest anyone. They're there to meet people, get to know who's who and who is active in a gang and who is not. So that's our response. I feel very positive about it, and I do have to say, here are the facts. These come from the FBI, and they're reported by us, and as of the end of 2012, crime is down. I repeat, it is down in the city. And if you look at 2013, it continues to be down. So in this case, the sheriff and the others are wrong. Now, the murders are the most troubling thing, obviously. That is the most violent a violent crime can be. It's the one we care about the most, and we are working as a city council to prevent those things from happening where we can. They are very near appointment of a task force to study what we aren't doing that we could be doing to help young men make better choices. And I say that because the truth is almost all violent crime is caused by young men. So we need to get involved. We have to do something about it, and the council is stepping up to do that. That's another effort that's going on. The crimes we have seen, the four murders, I hear a lot of conversation about it when I'm at the grocery store and when I'm at other meetings. And people don't have enough information, and they feel scared. And let me tell you, that's rational, right? You're a smart human being if you feel unsettled by these shootings. We all are. And we mourn the loss of these four men, two white men, two black men. And so I say that because I have heard a lot of comments, race-based, that our problem is race. And I'm going to tell you, it's not. Our problem is we're not doing everything we can on a preventive side. And we are going to learn what it is we're not doing, and we're going to start doing it. At the same time, I can tell you, you know, violent crime is down. Four is too many. We don't want any murders in Colombia. I would like to say we've had a year where we didn't have any, but that's not true. We had nine murders in 94. We had nine murders in 2000. We had five in 2008, and so we're up to four now. I don't want any more this year. My goal is zero. So we are going to do what we can to prevent crime, but I will tell you that comes from that community policing where the officers are known and they're out in the neighborhood. But the number one job of the police department is to solve the crimes after they happen. And they're doing a great job with that. You know, our track record is 2 weeks. 2 weeks and we find the bad guys. That's terrific work. That's fantastic police work. I am proud of our officers and the work that they do. They have been criticized in the community. They're not heavy-handed enough. We just go down, kick down some doors. Dynamic entry is the nice way to say that, right? What that means is militarized SWAT raids. Dynamic entry is the nice way to say it. It's where you bust down the door and you, you know, run in with overpowering force and execute a search warrant. So the criticism I've heard is that you don't do enough of that. If you just did more of that, this wouldn't happen. Well, I want to tell you two things. It's untrue and it's foolish at the same time. And it's just logically foolish, and I'm going to explain why. Search warrants happen after a crime. You can't get a search warrant from a judge before a crime's occurred, right? That's America. We are not allowed as a police department to take away your civil rights until you've done something wrong. So how a search warrant works, we get news that maybe someone's planning on selling a lot of drugs. Well, we have to go convince a judge to empower us, to let us take away that person's civil rights and go look, search their house, search their car. Using a drug example because it's the only one where this makes any sense, right? When you talk about a murder, what am I going to get a judge to let? How do I do that? What evidence do I have that you're going to shoot someone tonight? It's ridiculous on its face. So the judge, if he has enough probable cause, enough evidence for the judge to feel that he should let you take away someone's civil rights, he will empower our officers to suspend civil rights and go search. Half of the time in America, nationwide, half the time, we don't find it. We don't find the evidence. And why is that? Because tipsters, another proposal from the sheriff, tips, are notoriously bad information. These are generally bad guys who give a tip in exchange for money, and they are almost always lying. That's why 50% of the time you do a search warrant, you do not find evidence. And the evidence you do find, you don't get a conviction all the time. In fact, that's about half the time. So this is not a very effective tool. Unfortunately, it's the only tool, right? At some point when the crime happens, you have to go look. You have to gather evidence. We have to use that tool, but we have to use it when we have evidence. So I go through all that to explain why search warrants cannot prevent crime. They're not capable of it. They've never been capable of preventing crime. They do not reduce crime. They have no impact on the crime rate. I say that, and you can go check for yourself and prove it. Look at the number of search warrants we've run and the crime rate. We did more in the past where there was more crime, and we do less now when there's less crime. Why is that? Because they're related directly. We can only do a search warrant if there's been a crime, right? So they don't prevent crime. They are after the fact. That's one of the things I want to address today. surging, having more SWAT raids is not going to affect the crime rate. It's not going to keep these murders from happening. We have to be smarter. We have to do the right things to prevent these crimes from happening. What are those things? Well, we are going to put more cops on the street, and we are going to do this task force. And there are many people who have sort of sniffed and said, a task force, I want you to do something. Well, believe it or not, this task force is that. We have a lot of services in this community to address things that we all assume cause crime, and they do occasionally. Poverty, parentless children, right? We know that certain things do lead to crime. Crime is a lot like cancer. There are many causes, and not one treatment can solve it all. We have to have many approaches across the whole spectrum of reasons why people commit these crimes. The task force job is to figure out where are we hitting it and where are we missing it and how can we do better. So, again, I love the fact that the police department's come up with Mission One. It's already operational, and man, it's getting results. All of the bad guys in these shootings have been found and arrested and or referred to the prosecutor. So we know the answers to those questions, and we are working hard to try to protect this community. That is our first job. We care deeply about it, and we're going to do it the right way.